The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Samaritas, the state's largest private foster care and adoption agency. However, Samaritas also provides a number of other services around the state. They are one of the largest refugee resettlement agencies in Michigan. They serve homeless families, persons with disabilities, abused and trafficked women. They also provide market rate and affordable housing for seniors and HUD housing for families, and also have skilled nursing, memory care, and rehab communities in Grand Rapids, Cadillac, and Saginaw. Samaritas, we thank them for their support. The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. TechTown Detroit is a business incubator and accelerator, helping tech startups and local businesses launch and grow. TechTown supports businesses with co-working, office, meeting, and event space. They also connect entrepreneurs to resources and learning and networking events in Detroit. TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. Hey everybody, happy Friday. I'm Craig Folly. This is the week that was on Deadline Detroit. Glad to have you with me today. And of course, I have my regular panelists here, Alan Lengel.
Hello.
Editor here at Deadline Detroit. We appreciate you. Co-founder of Deadline Detroit. All around swell guy. Appreciate it very much.
Wow.
Boy, you can tell it's Friday.
Yeah. Occupying the coveted
bimbo chair.
Nancy Derringer is back with us once again. And
I'd just like to say that camera adds 25 pounds.
Does it really?
So, yeah. I just looked. I'm like,
That's what I was thinking.
God, I must weigh like 10 pounds then. See, in real life, I'm just absolutely gaunt.
You're a skinny guy. Yeah.
But anyway, I don't think I need to wear this scarf indoors.
No, you probably don't.
It is scarf weather out here, though.
It
snowed yesterday.
Really chilly.
Now, it is November. So let's start out with this. It snowed yesterday about a quarter inch on my deck, and I posted a picture. People started freaking out yesterday. Mm-hmm. I had some snow accidents early in the morning already.
Oh, yeah. Always.
And people are just like, it's too early.
It's too early.
It's November in Michigan.
Yeah.
It does happen, doesn't it?
It always reminds me when I was at Michigan State at Berkey Hall, I would walk in and there'd be a guy, Terry Vanderveen. And when it was cold
out. Shout out to Terry.
Terry Vanderveen would say, it's a chilly dog out there.
Chilly dog.
Man. Yeah. College must have been fun back in the 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the Charleston stuff like that.
Crazy stuff.
Chilly dog.
Bootleg liquor. Oh, my God.
Daddy-o. I kid.
Stuffing phone booths.
That's just me being mean. I apologize.
Compliment and then whack.
Swallowing goldfish. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Now, let's get to the news of the week. We are about to enter a completely new phase in this whole impeachment world.
Yep.
With a lot of these people who've done private testimony being called in for public testimony next week. We're starting to get some clearer pictures with the release of these transcripts of the actual transcripts of the testimony that took place. No ellipses in there. These are the verbatim, word-for-word answers that these people gave. And that quid pro quo is now pretty much cemented.
It really is. Yeah. Sondland is like, he's like covering his ass with both hands. Any other hand he can find out there.
That's right.
Lindsey Graham's, I think maybe he's in cahoots with... You know, Democrats, because he changed his testimony. I've never seen that.
I've never seen that before.
Excuse me, he was busted. He was busted for perjury, and he went and did the smartest thing he could do at that point. You know, so.
Well, do you know who Lindsey Graham is? He is the reincarnation of Earl Landgreeb. Do you know who Earl Landgreeb was?
Please enlighten me.
He was the Valparaiso, Indiana, U.S. representative who, during the delamination of the Nixon presidency, said famously, "Don't confuse me with the facts."
Oh, yeah, that guy. I forgot about that guy.
Right.
Well, Lindsey Graham basically said, I'm not going to read any of this stuff.
Yeah, don't confuse him with the facts.
Already made up his mind. This is a guy who's a potential juror. If it gets to the Senate, who's just said, I'm not going to look at the evidence.
Yeah.
That's usually not the kind of instruction that juries get.
That's an impeachable offense right there.
Well, I mean, should impeach him as well.
But
everybody should want to know the facts.
Of course.
And if it's going to be brought to your attention, maybe it behooves you to actually read up just a little bit. Now, we don't want to follow the president's example.
No.
Reading is fundamental, people.
Well,
it's really important that we all learn how to do this.
The message is, I don't care what he did. I am not impeaching him.
Exactly.
So it doesn't matter. I'm voting not to impeach regardless, and that's the message he's sending.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
absolutely.
All right. Well, that's who he is, you know?
That's our guy.
It's like all these guys are so afraid of Trump. It's like yesterday, you know, the announcement that Jeff Sessions is going to run for Senate in Alabama, and he runs a commercial, and he says, I just want to say, I didn't write a tell-all book. And, you know, I think the president's just doing fine. Well, meanwhile, you know, Trump has privately said, I'm going to bust your ass if you, you know, run. He goes, I am just going to trash you.
Well, hey, speaking of testifying.
Please, Mr. President, don't trash me.
Please don't hurt me.
John Bolton. Speaking of people who are writing tell-all books, John Bolton is getting ready to write a book. We know this. He's already got a deal.
Yeah, right.
And the thing is, he's trying to postpone his testimony. I guarantee you he's rushing to get that thing ghostwritten as fast as possible. Because you don't want to give away all the good stuff for free.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and so I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of tell-all books coming out.
I think there will.
Anonymous, the Washington Post got a copy of this book by Anonymous. Mm-hmm. A Warning is the name of this book. I want to know your thoughts on this, because part of me is saying, well, yes, it's somewhat courageous to go out there and you know, tell what's going on in the White House. But part of me is also like, you know what? If you're so worried about it, maybe you should resign from your position.
I have absolutely lost all my sympathy for anyone who is still working in that White House. And, you know, I read the two reviews last night, the Times and the Post, and it sounds like it's nothing that we don't already know. The president is an infant. The president is out of control. He's ignorant. He's impetuous. He's venal. He's greedy. Add all the bad adjectives. That's what the president is. So it's like, why are you still there? And why aren't you? And if it's that bad, you have an obligation to your country to stand up, use your own name, bring as many people on board as you can, and you know, take some responsibility. And they won't do it. They'll never do it.
I'm waiting for Melania's book. I mean, I think that'll be the greatest book. I mean, they can't like each other. I mean, she's got a bully campaign. he demonizes immigrants. I mean, they must just go at it. But I have mixed feelings. I think in some ways it's great. I think it's so funny. I mean, it's driving the guy crazy. Like, I'm sure he's got people investigating on this. I mean, in the same way that he had people, I'm sure, trying to unearth the name of the whistleblower, which he eventually did. So I have mixed. I mean, the right thing to do would obviously be to quit, come forward. But I think it's funny. I find some humor in the whole process.
Some very dark humor.
Dark
certainly.
Humor. Well,
and I mean, this just adds to the president's paranoia, though. He's like, you know, I mean, if there's a guy who's probably got an enemies list, it's Donald Trump, right?
I know.
You talk about that. I mean, I wonder if he walks around looking at everybody every day, going, "Is that the one? Is that the one? Who is it? Which one of you bastards is the one?"
Well,
that
there's been a lot of people. Pompeo. Was, you know, Vice President was a suspect. Nikki Haley was a suspect.
It's November 8th?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, are you willing to make a prediction on November 8th? Because we know we're going to find out who this person is eventually.
Yeah.
Are you willing to make a prediction?
No.
Okay. I'm putting my number 22 bet on Kellyanne Conway, and I'm putting my red bet on a woman.
Well, then she's doing a really, really good job of making sure that nobody thinks it's her.
And I know. I'm a little wobbly on there, but they haven't called no more bets yet, so I'm still, you know,
I had a feeling you were going to go there.
Did you see Kellyanne Conway, I guess, during an interview during the campaign with on Morning Joe or whatever, afterwards, she was basically like saying what a horrible guy Donald Trump was, and oh my God, this won't, you know, go on much longer. It's possible. I mean, her and her husband. I mean,
I know
George Conway. I mean, it's just it's crazy that she works so closely with Trump. I don't think it's her because I don't find her that heroic.
Okay.
I find her.
Think about it though.
She's definitely.
This is a senior staffer, right?
Yeah.
Now it didn't say cabinet appointment or anything like that, but it said
senior staffer.
How many people are still around from the time that original?
Right.
That original thing came out in the Washington Post, and now the book. That's been about a year, right?
It was a year last summer.
So it's who's still around?
Because
the churn over there
is pretty
fast. It's a
churn over there, so it's kind of like the pool of possible
candidates.
Every
time somebody leaves, it gets a little smaller. The noose is tightening.
I have a feeling it's like a deputy of somebody, higher
somebody
up.
That we don't know.
Like the deputy
from
the State Department.
The news.
Yeah, somebody who's
possible.
Able to slide, who's not meeting with the president every day.
Yeah.
Where the president can kind of give that Larry David look of...
Yeah.
Like that, you know.
But I'm still thinking a woman. I don't know why. There was something about the story about it's your dad walking around without pants on that just sounded like a woman. I don't know. It might be that actually happened in my family, but you know.
Well, but okay, let's move back to this impeachment thing for just a second, because I was reading a story in the Post this morning that I thought was quite fascinating, in that the Democrats may be shifting their the Republicans may be shifting their defense strategy once again to suggest that Rudy Giuliani and maybe Sondland and Mick Mulvaney were not operating on behalf of the president, but were themselves the ones that had concocted this scheme to protect the president. And they're going to go down this road with all these things.
Oh, yeah. My God.
You know, did the president specifically instruct you to do this?
I'm imagining like an open
so they're
top
getting
bus,
ready to
right
yeah,
yeah. And these guys
they're
are like
start throwing
fighting.
Them out in front.
It's like they're gonna throw them out. What is the what was the image from Russian literature? It was the troika, yeah. You know, with the horses and the wolves are like running behind the troika and they're just throwing people out the back, hoping it slows the wolves down.
It's going to get
really
interesting.
Oh my
though.
God, it's awful.
And to see who they're willing to sacrifice at the altar of Donald Trump.
Yep.
Because they're going to try that. Because like I said, they don't. Their first defense was, well, there was no quid pro quo. Then they were like, well, there was a quid pro quo, but it's not a crime. It's not a big deal.
Everybody does quid pro quo.
Everybody does that. And when they say, actually, no, they don't. This is really unusual. And like, well, maybe it wasn't him that told them to do it. And I'm not sure that any of these people is willing to go down like that.
Well,
I think there's going to be a lot of people saying, oh, hell no, it's not going to be me.
I think the strategy they're using, which has appeared to work in the past, is that normalizing Trump's behavior
right.
to the point where, I mean, if
just
we
more
had,
locker room
if,
talk.
Yeah, yeah, if we had seen a president talk this way or act this way, you know, previously, it would be outrageous. But we've become so used to it. The bar is like he's no longer presidential in what we think of as presidential. Anymore, you know. I used to tell people jokingly sometimes see someone
who's never presidential,
and you'd say, "Wow, you look presidential," and now that's an insult.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Well, interestingly enough, though, I mean, the Democrats are still quite worried about this guy as a potential to get reelected. We're hearing lots of discussions about electability. Elizabeth Warren getting ripped at because, of course, she's leading. And Medicare for All being used as a cudgel against her, obviously, right now. People mm-hmm. saying that this plan isn't realistic. You know, God forbid a politician actually outline how they would pay for something.
Right.
She
mm-hmm.
actually did that and is getting penalized for it right now.
Right.
But there's a lot of concern about who's going to win, which is now why Michael Bloomberg is potentially injecting himself into the race. Is he a Republican? Is he a Democrat? Is he an independent? I mean, he's a former mayor
everything.
With a ton of cash.
He's been all.
So, I mean, he can match the Republicans dollar for dollar on this campaign, which... Everybody likes a self-funded candidate, but is he adding anything to the race at this point in time?
You know,
I'd say yes. I'd say.
I mean, he let the herd thin out. Smart to wait until the herd thins itself.
I say that because I think people are worried about the selection. I mean, you know, look, Elizabeth Warren. You're not going to find a smarter candidate, but you know, does she appeal to a broad enough audience? I don't know. I mean, in the end, I know a lot of Democrats are going to be like, whoever is running as a Democrat, I'm going to vote for. And that's basically a lot of the mentality there. But, you know, the independents or whatever who may just say, I don't know. I think Bloomberg is obviously one of the more moderates. He's like a more together Joe Biden. Kinda,
well, and Joe Biden's not exactly doing real well right now.
Right.
I mean, he's getting clobbered in
Joe's
Iowa.
Joe's getting killed. I mean, look, this whole Ukrainian thing is not helping because in the end, his son should never have taken the job.
Yeah, of course not.
It looks sleazy, but and Joe is just kind of stumbling through at times. I mean, he's, you know, I think he's still a likable guy, and he's actually got a lot of strong support in the African-American community, who I think people... You know, like the idea that he helped Obama.
Well, Democrats are absolutely freaking out that Pete Buttigieg is doing as well in Iowa as he is. He mm-hmm. had a strong third place in that poll, only a couple of points behind. And then
so we
like,
could end up having the front runner coming in fourth place in Iowa.
Exactly.
Right.
And
yeah.
But the thing is, now they're saying that Pete Buttigieg cannot win in South Carolina because African Americans who, you know, there's a great right. column by Jonathan Capehart in the Post today talking about the myth behind black voters not being willing to support somebody who might be gay.
Oh.
And saying, so he can't win since 60% of the electorate in South Carolina is African American. You need your most reliable voters to be over the top. And I don't know. I mean...
Joe Biden will do well in South Carolina.
He might.
Before we move on from yeah. Michael
But the Democrats
Bloomberg,
are doing their best to eat their own right now.
Yes, they really are. It's the usual circular firing squad. But I just have to say, if your takeaway from the last 5 years is, hey, I got a lot of money. I'm a rich guy. I could be president of the United States. You have learned the wrong damn lesson. I mean, this is like...
Because rich New Yorkers have worked out so well. Well,
I think clearly business people who always say, oh, you know, everyone says we need a business person, a person who knows finance and stuff like that. It's not the same in government, particularly at the federal level. It's not about balancing the budget. I mean, we're operating at a deficit. It's like Obama, you know, when he came in, he needed stimulus money. And... he needed to create a greater debt to stimulate the economy. And the Republicans fought him tooth and nail on that and finally let him, you know, do some stimulus money, but not as much as he should have. But I think, you know, we see it with Rick Snyder, you know, another business guy who was like inept, really, as a politician. I mean, I think his heart
was
generally...
They are two different jobs, and they require two different skill sets.
Rick Snyder was calling the voters customers. It's like the Walmart mentality. It's ridiculous. And so here we have Donald Trump, and everyone thought, oh, Donald Trump, he knows what he's doing. But everyone says, hey, look at the, you know, look at the stock market. Look at my 401k. Look at the rest of the world. Yeah. Look at the country. Look at the way, you know, this election is really about preserving the Constitution, whether we want to see the Constitution further erode, whether we want to see checks and balances further erode.
Alan, I would vote for you over Mike Bloomberg.
Wow, thank you. Wow, got one vote. That's a start.
Hey,
one step at a time.
Bloomberg's been throwing some cash around in Detroit. I mean,
With the mayor.
And keep doing that stuff. That's fine, Mr. Bloomberg.
That's
you want to make your mark in America? Put some of that money to work in cities that we need. I don't have a problem with that, but don't get in there now.
Was it Samantha Bee who had that great piece a few months ago, like, run for the Senate?
Yeah.
I mean, all these people who think they want to be president, it's like, we need senators too. We need great representatives. It's like, it's not all about having the top job. In fact, in many ways, it's not about having the top job.
You know what's interesting? What about
the ego, though, to even run for that job?
Beto O'Rourke is a perfect example. He should have been running for the Senate from Texas instead of like wasting all this money, you know, appearing on the cover of Vanity Fair, you know, flexing his guns.
Now, Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think the word of how she's treated her help and stuff like that, I don't know if she can, maybe she can get over that stain.
I've worked
there
for Amy Klobuchar's before in the past.
Yeah, you know. I met her at a party. She was very in D.C. She was very nice, but you know,
she's a non-entity. I mean, you know, she's, what is she polling at now? Like 0.7%.
Yeah, but you know what? It's,
I mean, she's down there with Marianne Williamson and all the rest of
them. But it's
Tulsi Gabbard, for God's sake.
But it's early when you end up as a front runner early on. It's a danger, and I think Joe Biden is seeing that. Joe Biden, it's a liability to be a front runner so early on in the race.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody's aiming at you.
We can't get off Washington yet, because the other big story that came out yesterday, this one came out of New York, actually, is that the Trump Foundation has to pay, Donald Trump has to pay $2 million of his own money.
Oh, my God.
I don't think he has
as restitution for running basically what the prosecution called a sham charity.
Right.
They collected money and they basically used it for campaign purposes, other things.
The
portrait. Well, I wanted to get to that. That was my favorite line in the first story that I was reading about this yesterday when it first came out. They said, his lawyer said, well, the only reason that they kept the portrait for themselves is because they were the only ones who bid on it at the auction. They started the bidding at $10,000, and everybody else is like, why the hell would I want that?
I'd rather have a portrait of Kramer.
I mean, I'd rather have a Velvet Elvis. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Dogs playing poker.
On a bad painting of Donald Trump in tennis clothes.
Yeah, one of those tennis sweaters.
Oh,
like, it's just like a scene from Trading Places there. And she dropped the ball. it's such a bad picture. And I'm just looking at it. And now, of course, it hangs at Doral, or one of his properties
in
Florida.
Clubs, yeah.
But that was the best line.
Next to his
Nobody
Newsweek
else
cover,
bid on
his
it.
Fake Newsweek cover.
I'm serious. They're like, you know, I got $10,000. We have a $10,000 bid. Do we have $10,500? Everybody's like, put your paddle down, honey. Put your paddle down. don't even sneeze.
I know.
You're like,
exactly. Don't scratch your nose no matter what you do.
That's exactly right. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of
$2 million. That's a pittance. But,
well, he's
like,
I'm never going to settle this case. Well, maybe you should have settled that case.
Oh, he says that all the time. He says, I've never settled a lawsuit. Settles them constantly. Yeah. Settled them for all his life.
Trump University.
Trump University, Trump stakes.
But
so,
that was kind of a funny story yesterday.
Yes, very funny.
Let's move closer to home, shall we?
Okay.
An institution that I used to work for is having a very, very bad couple of weeks. Wayne State University.
Ah.
And the president, Roy Wilson, just again, full disclosure, I reported to his chief of staff, was my direct report at Wayne State. So, you know, I have to put that out there.
Right.
I had a good relationship with him. But clearly he's got some problems with half the board.
Right.
Four board members voted when one guy was absent to see if they could get him fired from the job.
Right.
Now, Kim Trent, who, of course, is chair of the board right now, said, no, we didn't actually have a real session going on.
It was an informational discussion or something they called it. Yeah,
on this tuition plan that they announced a couple of weeks ago. It was supposed to be an informational meeting, getting faculty there, presenting them the information about it. So it wasn't technically a board meeting, and therefore the vote was improper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not this gets upheld in some way, and apparently Attorney General Nessel's going to look at this. They said they'll look at it. It doesn't mean they're going to officially weigh in or not. But this is not good for the university.
No.
It makes them look completely dysfunctional.
Right.
You've had this brewing for a couple of years now. I mean, there's been a lot of animosity, a 4-4 split on that board.
Mm-hmm.
And the president's sort of caught in the middle. The thing is, if they think this makes them, you know, okay, say you fire Roy Wilson. Say that this gets upheld. Who's going to want to come here with this dysfunctional board? Who are they going to get?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they've got problems with the DMC right now, as we found out this morning, with their accreditation on their neurology program, their neurosurgery program. So they lost their accreditation on that. They have to get that back, appeal it.
They look like the Detroit City Council right now, basically.
They do.
In some of its worst periods.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm surprised nobody called them Shrek yet. I mean, we're getting close to it. But Wayne State is such an important part of the community in terms of investment, not only just in the academic side of things, but with their relationships with the medical centers, with their relationships with the city in terms of construction and building and all these things that are happening. It all matters.
Make
your date.
They are a vital resource in the community, and they, you know, this kind of shenanigans on the board really makes them look bad, and it's terrible. I mean, especially coming 2 weeks now after this innovation center, the University of Michigan is expanding its footprint into Detroit, and Wayne State's sitting there going, "What are we, chopped liver?" And it's apparently they have chopped liver.
I mean, look, Wayne State is clearly the biggest university in the city, been around for a long time, and it went through the struggle where at some point people didn't want to come down to Detroit, and they were opening up satellite campuses in Oakland County, and now they're deservedly riding the wave.
Yep.
Of Detroit, we're Detroit, and
really underrated
on the branding. Wayne's a great school. I went there for 2 years before I went to Michigan State.
Yeah,
it had a great journalism department, and
I was an adjunct there for a couple terms, and I was amazed at the quality of the student body there and the other teachers, and it was wonderful.
But the board is not looking good.
No,
these are some shenanigans. And one of the board members who voted to remove Roy Wilson from his job actually called up Tony Holt, who's the police chief at Wayne State University, and said, "Deny him access to the building as of Tuesday at midnight." And Tony Holt's just like, "I don't think so.
I'm not going to do that.
Exactly.
I don't take orders from you."
Yeah, and it just, and if they did take the vote, because this meeting was taking place apparently behind closed doors,
right?
If they did take the vote, that would be a violation of the Open Meetings Act.
Yes,
why it wasn't a real meeting.
Yeah, I mean, all of this stuff, all this procedural, quibbling boils down to the fact that it was not a board meeting, and you can't just do that. So.
You know, it's interesting. Universities, I think people think of, oh my gosh, I'll go to a university, I'll teach, whatever. Everything is going to be so, copacetic, so mellow. And, universities are so known for their internal politics, even, academically and at the administrative level.
Yeah.
Dan Howes in the Detroit News wrote a pretty good column about the dysfunction of the boards at Michigan State and Wayne State as a cautionary tale, saying maybe this shouldn't be like an elected seat you run for these boards to see if you've got statewide appeal.
Right.
And that builds up your statewide name recognition, because these are statewide positions at those three research universities. Other schools don't have this sort of issue.
No. I was stunned when I moved to Michigan and was asked to vote on the Wayne State Board of Governors. I'm like, I know nothing about this.
Same time, I mean, I understand why you don't necessarily want to give that power to the governor.
Yeah.
But it should be something that,
There could be a higher ed commission or something
exactly.
like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't...
That vets people that actually have some experience in academia and understand these sorts of things. That would be kind of nice.
Exactly. And you're right to lump this in with MSU, because MSU has got big problems. And when somebody... We talked about this last week, didn't we? When somebody with as much, personal integrity and a gold-plated reputation as Nancy Schlichting says, "I can't work with you people," then you got a huge problem. But, Sparty on.
Another interesting thing here, Rashida Tlaib, of course, member of Congress from the city of Detroit, much loved by the Republican Party, part of the squad. She is now pushing for Congress to probe the tax break that Dan Gilbert qualified for the opportunity zone stuff, yeah. Which we have a column. Charlie LaDuff did a column about that for Deadline Detroit today that is there right now that you can read. Just get a little background for you. But this thing might not go away anytime soon. I have a feeling this could be one of those things where they start taking a look at it and realizing that, okay, some of these things may be abused.
The developers have been gaming the system forever. I mean, we've seen it with the Illiches, with public monies, and somehow
and Amazon
the big
and
guys,
every other major corporation that has tried to open something finds a way to get these breaks.
But this was a break that was specifically for lower income areas, and to have these things being utilized on the Woodward Avenue corridor downtown
for the Hudson's,
for the Hudson's building is ridiculous. So yeah.
I don't disagree, but there's enough wiggle room in these statutes to make it happen. So I mean,
I believe you.
I remember when they had the Renaissance zones for a while, and then there was
Brownfield
the Promise zones and all this stuff. But they all had specific boundaries. Back in the Archer administration, that was during the Clinton presidency, there were specific boundaries where you'd get these tax breaks. The opportunity zones not really like that. They were kind of more nebulous and sort of, it's basically whatever you deem to be an opportunity zone,
right?
You can kind of get that.
Well, amazing that a law passed under the Trump administration would have that much gray area for wealthy developers to manipulate. I'm shocked. I'm totally shocked.
I'm totally shocked. Yeah. I mean, look, Gilbert has played, you know, he's got Duggan. I'm sure, you know, I mean, they refer to him sometimes as the quasi mayor. And he donated $750,000 to the Trump inauguration, even though I don't think he was initially a Trump supporter. He was supporting
Chris
Christie.
He held some fundraisers for him, yeah.
Well, he opened the doors, and he tried to distance himself a little bit. I think he was worried. But he was a backer of Chris Christie during the primaries. But he knows how to play it. He was in the White House one day, somehow walking around while they were doing an awards for one of the teams, one of the world champion teams, and he just happens to walk by, and Trump's like, "Hey, Dan Gilbert, come on over here. You guys know who he is." And it's like, what is he doing walking around? Who gets to walk around the White House like that?
Exactly. Just hanging out.
Well, at least he didn't do what Gordon Sondland did, which was parlay that contribution to the inauguration into an
ambassadorship.
Because then he might be in really deep.
He could be.
All right. So what else do we have to get into? Oh, I thought this was interesting. You guys have Netflix?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you basically can get Netflix on any machine you want.
Right.
And apparently they're losing something like $6.6 billion in revenue a year between Netflix and some of the other subscription services on people who share passwords.
Oh.
And now all these companies are saying they're going to crack down on what they call password cheats.
Okay.
There was a really good story about this in the Detroit News.
I thought
today.
That was
everybody
allowed.
Has the
thought,
same.
It's not supposed to be. So they're talking about ways
to
get
up
around
to five.
It.
Well, you should get so many sign-ons for a family, for instance. You know, I mean, my daughter uses ours. She lives in California now, so
there you go.
Okay, well,
like they're going to send you a code on your phone in the middle of a program, and you have to thumb it in, or else you won't be able to watch it. I mean, they're talking about doing that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's going to be
how
really
far
annoying.
Can they go? Because there was a quote in this article that I thought was pretty good, and this is from a guy named Mike McCormack, who's an analyst at Guggenheim Securities, who's taking a look at how much money they're losing, how they do this, and they also did the sampling of the people. About how they would feel about this thing. And here's the quote. If you ask any cohort of young people if they will ever pay for Netflix or video services, the answer is unequivocally no.
It
doesn't bode well for paid journalism, paid television.
Well, it's how journalism has gotten screwed by starting out with free internet.
Right.
For, you know.
Part of it also is, I mean, there are kids with good jobs, but there are an awful lot of kids without good jobs. And I mean, you know, I was telling a friend of mine who's got a young adult daughter that it's like, you know, they've really left the nest when they're paying for their own cell phone and their own Netflix subscription. So whether they will do that or not, I don't know.
So benefits are no longer the standard. It used to be you knew they were on their own when they had benefits. That's my dad used to say.
That's a big one, yeah. Bennies are, that's important too.
But. Yeah, I remember, my father said that one day. He came home and he was in really good mood. He opens up a really good bottle of wine and I was over there for dinner. I'm like, why are you so happy? He's like, because all my children now have benefits. My little sister got a teaching job out in Boston at the time. And he was just like, wow,
My work here is done.
It's one of those things I didn't really think about at the time, but it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So last thing I want to get to, Checker Bar. Obviously, had something similar happen to them recently that Founders Brewery has been going through.
Yeah.
And they handled it quite a bit differently. than founders did.
I wonder how they got the idea that it should be handled differently.
Well, after watching the bad PR that has happened, they basically said, they did an investigation. We found out the guy was a jerk.
Yeah.
He said some bad things, and not just to that one person.
He was an equal opportunity jerk. Yeah, exactly. Equal opportunity jerk.
But they're like, so we fired this guy. Oh, and by the way, we're going to host a meeting to talk about, you know, perceptions of people in the city about whether or not restaurants downtown are really for everybody. What do we do to increase our outreach and our understanding of what might be troubling people?
Mm-hmm.
Nice step.
Yeah.
Good move.
Right.
Fire the offending party.
Right.
And then figure out a way to make it better.
Yeah. I think that's...
Imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And now Founders is in the position of... I saw the terms of this reopening.
It's unbelievable.
Amazing. They're going to be like... They're not reopening until January. They're going to be devoting, I think, contributing all of their profits, not, you know, receipts, but profits,
yep,
from the Detroit tap room for like 2 years, three,
yep,
years, something like that. 2022
profits, yep.
Unbelievable. I mean,
wow,
that's like,
and they're paying all those employees,
and they had
until
to settle,
they reopen.
They had to settle with Tracy Evans.
Yeah.
So I mean, all of this.
Yay, Tracy.
Exactly.
Well,
I mean,
but
think
you
got to
remember, San Miguel Brewing, which is a huge brewing company, just bought out a big chunk of Founders. That was a big investment for them.
Yeah.
One of the most successful microbrew brands in America. I guarantee you, there's a little bit of help coming from them. And they're saying,
I'm sure
this is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Their team got involved,
right,
and said,
sure,
we are not going to let you take us down.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So,
that's, I mean, in fact, there, if you were a conspiracy theorist, you could almost say to yourself that the bad handling of this at the beginning was due to the fact that they no longer had as much skin in the game. You
very
know,
true.
Hey, we sold 90% of this business to
right,
to a corporation.
All right. two more things I want to get to. Neither of them really good. This De La Salle high school hazing scandal is getting pretty ugly.
Yeah.
They forfeited a playoff game because they found out about this. And at first they said, well, it's not that big a deal. Then they came out and said, actually, this might be a little more pervasive than we thought.
And it involves a broomstick.
A broomstick.
Yeah.
Or threats of it. They don't know if there was any
right,
actual... They came out and said, clearly there was no penetration.
Yeah.
We've determined that there was no penetration.
That's good to know.
But the fact that you've got football players threatening other football players, even if it's an intimidation tactic... What's the point of that? Does that bring people closer together?
See, this is
Does that
my...
add to the bonding of the team?
That's
I played
team.
Sports for
That's
fun.
That's a team I don't want to play for.
This is
exactly.
This is the question that has come up time and again with these hazing incidents, whether it's sports, a fraternity, a sorority, whatever. What is the point? What is the point? I mean, I get that it's supposed to be a bonding thing, even though I don't think it is a bonding thing. But the idea that I think what it is I went through it, so therefore you have to too. And it's like
bonding,
that is one of the ugliest impulses in the human
nature. To me, the idea
nature.
Of bonding is like, hey, you know, some friends go out, whatever, you have a beer or a drink or something. It's not
yeah.
like, hey, why don't you come over? I'm going to take a broomstick and shove it up your ass. Let's do some bonding. That's not my, I don't know. Call me old fashioned.
Last time we heard about that was, of course, in a New York jail.
Yeah,
several years
exactly.
ago, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't get it. I don't understand it.
Uh-huh.
But maybe that's why I never played organized sports. I played in like the after school softball league, the intramural softball league, stuff
yes.
like that. Because I don't want a coach yelling at me, and two, I certainly don't need some a-hole senior
right.
threatening me
with a broomstick.
Exactly.
No, I thought Joe LaPointe's column yesterday in Deadline was pretty good on that subject.
Yeah,
and you know,
good.
He talked about some of the, you know, he said the first time he saw this, it was what they shaved some guy, right?
Yeah.
They shaved his whole body. And you know, he treated it as, oh, what a fun joke. You know, it's an initiation into the Red Wings. This is back when they were playing at Olympia Stadium.
Yeah.
And he said that over time his thinking began to evolve on this. And you know, I can only hope that the rest of us, and coaches and players in particular, have their thinking evolving
you
too.
The whole psychology behind, I mean, the denigrating of another human being in such
well an awful lot of it is just man hands on misery to man. It's like, I went through it, you'll go through it. And so at some point somebody has to say, I went through it and I don't want anybody else to go through it. It
right,
stops here.
Right.
But
well,
it never does. I
look,
mean, it's like how abuse is handed down.
Look, we keep looking at fraternities. They keep getting busted for hazing incidents all the time, even though the universities are cracking down, kicking them off campus when this stuff happens. They're still doing it.
I know.
And
it's the
still
mean
a part
kids.
Of life.
Yeah, it is. And this is, and they wonder why people think less of them.
The mean kids become president.
Yeah.
yeah.
All right, last story. The final two Kmarts in Michigan are slated to close.
That's
really?
Shonda.
The last two. I know. Well, I'm not shocked either, but at the same time, this
he
is...
said Shonda, not shocked.
Oh, this is end of an era. I mean, Kmart It used to be Kresge's, then they switched to Kmart.
Kmart screwed up. I mean, Kmart used to be the store. I mean, it was a discount store. You knew if you went to Kmart.
You're coming out of there with some tidy whities and a Slurpee.
Well, you were getting something cheap. You were getting it for cheaper than you could get it elsewhere. It was almost really considered a wholesale store. And then they decided to sell all their, you know, not all so good quality stuff at higher prices, and Target.
That's always a bad price.
Target came along, and Target was selling cheap.
And Walmart, too. Walmart killed
them. Yeah, and Walmart. And they came along and were selling cheaply and selling better products.
Target took it up, the quality and the shopping experience up a little bit.
And the price was still very affordable.
Yeah, it was.
And that was the thing.
Target was like the yuppies Kmart.
Well, it was like,
it was the queue line versus the bus. One actually works really, really well. The other one not so well, but it seems cooler.
Yeah.
So therefore,
I'm going to
shop
there.
But I won't take that.
Yeah.
As Dennis Miller used to say, one of his skits, he says, you know, there's a place, some department store that's giving away, you get three suits for one, you know, pay for one. And he goes, well, three of shit is still shit.
And with that, we need to wrap up the week that was.
E on the podcast.
That should not be the apostrophe in the end of the show or the exclamation point at the end of the show, but close enough. I appreciate it. By the way, Michael Lucido has been engineering our broadcast. He is also the host of this week's Zip. Check it out on Deadline TV at DeadlineDetroit.com. He does a very nice job in front of the camera instead of behind it, as he usually is. So
he was dying to get out there.
Check out all of his
tired
too.
Don't let your head get too big, my friend, because we need you back there still. But we'll bring you out every once in a while and let you see the sunlight. Thanks to Michael for his help in engineering the broadcast. Thank you, Nancy. We always appreciate Nancy Derringer for being here. Alan Lengel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Craig. Thanks for all of you for watching this. Also, thanks to TechTown and to Samaritas for sponsoring this program. I appreciate that very, very much.
Sponsors.
And with that, I will say goodbye, and Alan will say,
drive home safely.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Mad Dog Professional Services. Mad Dog Professional Services focuses on putting their clients on the leading edge of technology, faster than thought possible, to capture new revenue streams. That's Mad Dog Professional Services.